This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up. But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Michael Heck, president and CEO of GNO Inc., always looking to blame it on someone or something. Today it was the rain.
Blame it on the rain. Yeah, you know, the rain's a pretty good excuse. And well, you know, it often seems to be one of those things, you know, like when we flood, you know, it's like, oh, it just rained, you know? It's like, well, yeah, we know it rained, but... You know, and the thing about, like, with the catch basins weren't cleaned. Yeah, we know that. But, you see, that's not a...
Do you want to go
it's
there?
It's a reason, not an excuse. No, I don't want to go there. Let's talk about fun stuff like tariffs or something.
Yeah. Let's talk about what's the thinking inside of the D.C. Beltway. You just returned, I guess, this morning. What did y'all hear?
Yeah. Well, you know, when we planned this trip, it was a couple of weeks ago, and we were, frankly, much more concerned. We said, man, we got to go up there and just talk with the delegation and see what the thinking is. Since then, at least the markets have calmed down. And so we basically went and talked to our delegation and said, what's the feeling about what's happening on tariffs? And are we going to have something resolved or enough resolved by the time the 90-day, quote, pause ends up in early July, so that we're not going to essentially trigger another, you know, a COVID-like inflationary response. And the answer we got pretty consistently across the board is that the White House is very aware of the consequences of not taking action. They're very aware of what's happening with the markets, particularly the bond market, as well as the fact that midterms are about 500 days away, a little bit more than that. So everybody seemed pretty sanguine that there were going to be enough deals struck with enough of the key partners that it was going to set a framework that the rest of the partners could align with. And we would probably get down to something which would look close to a low tariff around the world, maybe a 10%, except for China, which we dealt with separately. So just the body language of everybody we talked to was, you know, don't worry, it's being handled. Everybody understands that we can't let this thing become another COVID.
Michael, there's a lot of moving parts right now up there, right? When we think about tariffs, the implication of DOGE, what's going to be in this one great bill relative to Medicaid and Medicaid financing, no matter what they tweak or no matter what needs to really be tweaked, still going to have some downstream implications for us. I was reading a piece that Senator Cassidy contributed to the other day about trying to get back to the original financing formula of Medicaid, where the state has a much larger share. On average, they're paying about 5 to 10% right now. A lot of folks in D.C. believe it should be as high as 40%. For a state like Louisiana and many other states that are relatively poor, that would be devastating.
It would be. I think the challenge with a lot of what's being proposed is not that people disagree with the direction or disagree with the theory behind it, but if these changes are made wholesale and all at once, like you said, with Medicaid, they would be very disruptive because, for whatever reasons, good or ill, we've adjusted or crept over time into these new postures. Another example of that is there's a lot of discussion now about fixing food stamps and really reinstating the work requirement in a robust way, which ironically was a Clintonian reform back in the 90s, and now it's basically been diluted. And that, so that's another thing that, yeah, you know, we need to get back that way, but an abrupt reversion back to 30, 35 years ago would be disruptive. And so I think in all these things, it's a question of pace. And what has people, you know, worried is that if you have a big, beautiful bill, you know, there can be, it's kind of like a legislative super burrito, right? It looks really good until you try to eat it all at once. There's a lot of stuff in there, and you might not even know what's in there. So, but that they're going for the big, beautiful bill. There's no question about that. And so we'll see how much we can digest.
Let's go back to tariffs for a moment, because I was listening to Scott Bessent yesterday, and it seems as though there's going to be the relaxation as it relates to the amount, but not necessarily a withdrawal from the floor of 10%. And we all know and suspect that 10% floor may be a problem.
I do agree, though, from what we heard yesterday. And again, I don't want to attribute any of this directly, but I'm telling you what I heard collectively. I think there is agreement that a 10% tariff is absorbable. That was the word that I heard a number of times. Maybe it came from Bessent himself. And that if the world had to do that, it would be a kind of a modulation that would net work for the U.S., but wouldn't totally disrupt supply chains or cause massive inflation. So, yeah, I would expect now that we'd see something more like that, and not getting back to a zero regime like some have called for.
Michael, an update. I know there's been some chatter about a foreign country that may have an interest in Avondale. What's up with that?
So there's a lot of talk going on about Avondale now. There are some companies, there's one Brazilian company that are looking at setting up there. I mean, it's an outstanding location, deep water access, lots of lay down space, good rail access. But the other thing that's interesting about Avondale is that President Trump is the first president, in at least my memory, certainly in recent memory, to mention domestic shipbuilding in a State of the Union address. And, you know, that's what Avondale was built for. I believe when it was the biggest employer in the state, it might have had 50,000 people working there. And so I think that's interesting, as well as, you know, does it make sense with the proper support from the government for it to become a shipbuilding location again? We're seeing a lot of interest in shipbuilding in Louisiana now in two areas. One is building vessels for wind farms, not for here, but wind farms elsewhere. For example, Edison Schwest has a big contract with Ørsted, Danish company, doing that. And then there also are a number of autonomous vessel manufacturers who are coming to Louisiana, working with the Department of Defense. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of discussion about Avondale. It's all constructive. And we wanted to test for that in D.C., and absolutely Avondale was on the mind of the delegation as well.
Anything shocked you? Anything that you kind of came out of left field and you were like, wow, didn't think about that?
I think the most like smack my head thing that came out of this is I was able to go and meet with the ambassador to Finland, because I happened to be the honorary consul, and I was able to go out and meet with her. And what's happened recently is that President Stubb, Alexander Stubb of Finland, has become a fairly close advisor to Donald Trump on Russia. Now, the geopolitical reasons for that is that Finland has a long and troubled history with Russia, and was basically under the thumb of the Kremlin for many decades since the 1940s. And so they have an expression where they're saying that they want Ukraine to avoid the Finlandization that that they experienced, meaning that even though they were nominally independent, they really didn't have sovereignty and control. And so we were talking about this, and I said, well, it's wonderful that that the president is becoming close to President Stubb of Finland, and that the reason is that they've got all this experience to offer the United States. Well, it turns out that probably the real reason why the president has gotten so close to Alexander Stubb is that Mr. Stubb happens to be a near professional level golfer. And he golfed
he's got a better handicap than Donald Trump.
and he golfed with the president and helped him win a tournament. So he's
diplomatic relations works in very strange ways.
Yeah, and he's been great. He's told the Kremlin, you don't play with President Trump. Now, I don't know if he meant that in the sense of geopolitics or golf, but
or golf.
But I think that's just fascinating. And look, for anybody that's more interested in the history of Finland right now, there is a video on YouTube about a reporter that went in about it, and I forget what it's called, but if you do, I'll find it throughout later on in our talk. But it's about an hour long, and it's a fascinating look inside the Finnish military and why they're one of the most prepared on earth. And if you have an hour, it's worth a watch.
Absolutely.
Or play golf.
And Finland newly admitted to NATO, right? Hadn't been in that long.
That's right.
And
that's
that right. Created a lot of consternation for the Russians as well when they were granted that privilege of being in NATO. Let's talk about back home here in Baton Rouge. While you were up there, a lot went on last week, right?
Yeah, it was a good week, actually, in Baton Rouge last week. We were able to push back on a number of anti-CCS, anti-carbon capture bills. But then most recently, stuff that's gone through is first the high-impact jobs program, which is a program being led by LED, which would essentially replace the quality jobs program that we currently have as one of our major or basic tools. And what's interesting about it is that if you actually look under the hood, it represents a fundamental shift, because the quality jobs program was really focused on incentivizing job creation numerically, trying to get more jobs. This new program is fundamentally focused on trying to raise wages. So it's looking at raising wages, particularly in those parishes that have lower wage jobs. And so it's a different philosophical approach. And I think they want to try it out with some flexibility and see, particularly in those parishes that have not experienced the wage growth of some of our parishes like St. Charles, if this incentive can help encourage the same type of high-paying jobs in those other parishes. So it's going to be a little bit of an experiment, but they're clear-eyed about the philosophy behind it.
Michael, how are they going to phase out the quality jobs program? I mean, because it's a multi-year program. I happen to see a list of participants. I was a little bit surprised by some that are on that list.
This is just like, it's just like Obamacare. If you like your quality jobs program, you keep your quality jobs program.
Okay.
I'm kidding. Everybody who has QJ keeps their QJ. It just means that as new companies come to the state, the incentive that they would be offered would be this new high-impact jobs program based on their wage rate as opposed to the other one. And so basically what it's going to say is that depending on what percentage you are over a parish's median wage, you'll then be eligible for some percentage reimbursement. But no, everybody who has old QJ keeps QJ.
All right. Insurance reform, big issue, top of mind, number of bills passed.
Yeah, this is stuff that I'm personally very excited about because every single one of these bills is one where you kind of smack your head and say, well, wow, that makes sense. I can't believe we were doing it differently. So some of the bills that passed through, one is medical transparency, whereby if you get a award, it's going to be based on what was actually paid in medical bills, not what was on the bill. And oftentimes there's a big difference. Advanced, modified comparative fault also advanced. And modified comparative fault means that if you are more than 51% responsible for an accident, you cannot also collect damages. Kind of seems to make sense. No pay, no play says that if you did not have auto insurance, that you can only collect for damages over $100,000. So it's basically meant to incentivize people to get auto insurance or not to give them the ability to drive without insurance and yet still get damages. And then the Housley presumption, which I just love saying the Housley presumption because it's so mysterious, basically means that you have to demonstrate to the jury that there's a direct connection between your injury and the accident, and not just that you're implying that there's a connection because before the accident you didn't have the injury and after the accident you had it. It sounds obscure, but basically it means that the evidence has to be more explicit. And all of these now are going over to the Senate.
Yeah. It will be interesting to see where this ultimately leads. I'm still a little skeptical as to what the benefits are going to be.
I think the skepticism is obviously born of experience and justified, but I do think that doing these things that seem to make common sense are the right things to do. Now, I saw something online as I was in the plane from CNBC about how, well, this was home insurance rates, not auto, but it's pretty fascinating. So Louisiana has gone up 34% since 2021 in terms of our home insurance, which, that feels about right. It's a huge increase. But at the same time, Mississippi has declined 15% over that same period. So I said, huh? That doesn't seem to make sense. And so, I asked the insurance commissioner, I texted him, I said, why is Mississippi not gone down or gone down while we've gone up? I mean, we're, similar conditions. I think there's still a lot of billboard attorneys in Mississippi. What's the difference? And he said a number of things. He said that the plaintiff attorney culture is not as strong. They've got a better building inspection process. And they've also been luckier than Louisiana in terms of direct hits of hurricanes. That's, according to the commissioner. So I just think there's a lot of variables, and I think we got to keep kind of twiddling the knobs and see if we get some improvement over time.
Yeah, no doubt. Got to get to a break. We're visiting with Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
I'm Emma Greed, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Michael Heck, President and CEO of G&O Inc. Michael, got to ask you about this most recent news relative to Plaza Tower. They're in talks with a proposed developer. Is this real or is this just more chatter?
You know, Newell, I am pleasantly shocked. It's real. I have been trying for years now, even before the Super Bowl, to figure out with developers and architects what could actually happen with Plaza Tower, and have always come up empty-handed just because it's tough to make it math out based on the cost of bringing it back to commerce combined with the market conditions. But I've talked to the estate of Joe Yeager, and I think this is absolutely real. Lincoln Avenue Communities is the biggest developer of affordable senior housing in the country. They recently renovated and reopened the Tivoli Apartments, which you might know on St. Charles as you're going downtown right before you get to Lee/Tivoli Circle. So I think they're legitimate, and they are going to transform the tower into a residential complex for qualified elderly, over 300 apartments. And so I asked the person I talked to, I said, okay, that sounds great and it's a good use, but how does the math work out? And what he said is that because they're doing affordable housing and senior housing, it allows them to bring additional slices into the capital stack that then can complement the state and federal historic tax credits, and that they believe, and these guys have as much experience as anybody, that they can make the math work and they can get it done. So I mean, obviously nothing is done until it is, but this is far and away the most legitimate use that I've heard of in a couple of years, and I'm optimistic, more than just cautiously optimistic. I'm optimistic, and that's great because I have to remind people, everybody said, let's tear it down. Well, tearing it down would cost over $20 million. And so then you'd have a $20 million hole. So that was unlikely to happen. So I was very worried it was going to sit there for years as a zombie building. And, you know, now maybe we have a way forward.
Yeah, and hopefully the estate takes an approach that makes sense. 'Cause these financing opportunities are very fragile, and timing is everything. And if you start asking for things that just can't be done because of the math, as you say, we'll be stuck again.
I mean, yeah, I think that the estate is being they aggressively want to unload these properties and get it back into commerce. It's a very different posture than we had before.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, Michael, we have a special guest that joins us.
Yeah, this is an exciting one. We have Tim Poche. He's the CEO of Delta Utilities, and he's going to talk about their acquisition of CenterPoint Energy's natural gas distribution companies, which are in Louisiana and Mississippi. And it represents close to 400,000 customers, 500 employees coming to Delta Utilities, and is going to end up being a really big win for New Orleans. So it's great to have Tim on.
Tim, welcome to the show. Not a lot of pressure. Mike says you're the exciting one. I guess all the others were dull. So there's high expectations for you.
Meta. Hyundai, huh?
Yeah. Well, Michael and Newell, thanks for having me on again. We really are excited to be here. You know, Delta Utilities is a Louisiana-born natural gas utility that we decided to headquarter right here in our hometown of New Orleans. And as Michael said, we did back on April 1st complete the acquisition of CenterPoint Energy's gas distribution business in Louisiana and Mississippi. You know, that was a Houston-based company that we brought to New Orleans, now and about 400,000 customers that stretched from Lake Charles to South Lafayette, along the Bayou region, and up in North Louisiana around Shreveport, and all through the Gulf Coast to Mississippi, and up through the northwestern part of Mississippi. So we couldn't be more excited to have those 400,000 customers in our fold, and looking forward to providing them service. And it's gone great for the last month or so that we've had them in, and we're equally excited to look forward to our pending acquisition and transaction with Entergy, where we will acquire Entergy's natural gas utilities that are in Louisiana, in New Orleans, and in Baton Rouge, and that's another 200,000 customers. And together, those 600,000 customers will make us one of the largest utilities in the United States, among the top 40 utilities in the United States, and certainly one of the largest in the Gulf South, with 900 employees strong all throughout Louisiana and Mississippi. And we, as I said, we really excited about having our headquarters here in New Orleans. And we're located in CBD. We just signed one of the largest Class A commercial leases in the last 5 years, and we're ramping up operations, and couldn't be more thrilled to do so.
What are the next steps, Tim? We're visiting with Tim Poche, CEO of Delta Utilities. Are there other providers within the state of Louisiana that are looking to consolidate as well?
You don't know. I can't speak for other providers within our states, but we're certainly poised as the largest natural gas provider in Louisiana and the second largest in Mississippi, and we certainly will look to be opportunistic, whether it's other privately owned gas utilities or other private gas utilities, or, you know, potentially municipally owned gas utilities, to expand our footprint and to provide that same reliable, affordable, resilient service to customers. So growth through acquisitions, growth through additional customers is certainly part of our plan.
So when folks hear from you guys, like, you know, that y'all have taken over, or that you've completed the acquisition with these companies and CenterPoint and Entergy, what is it that, you know, they, I'm sure people ask, well, what is it that they're actually getting? What are they purchasing?
Well, first and foremost, all of the people that served those utilities and those customers, 700 of them that are coming over to us. So I like to say that, you know, we might be a utility, and that means we have a lot of assets, but our most important and our biggest asset is our people. So the most important thing that transferred to us was all of the good men and women that work for Entergy and CenterPoint that provide gas utility service in Louisiana and Mississippi have come over to us. And we acquired all the pipes and distribution assets, and you know, everything that we needed to provide service. And like I said, over the last month or so since that acquisition, that's gone very seamlessly from our customers. And we are really poised to make that transition very seamless for our customers.
There should be no interruptions or changes, rate changes as a result of the transition. We're just going to be providing that same dependable service through modernized technology that we've put in place from our perspective on the Delta utility side to keep the business running smoothly.
So hard assets, y'all get all the distribution infrastructure, transfer infrastructure, pipelines, things of that nature as well?
That's correct. All the pipes, the local main distribution lines, all the service lines, the meters, all of the trucks and equipment to operate that. We transferred contracts that were in place between the utilities, and we'll start to operate those contracts that allow us to procure gas from suppliers and transport gas on major interstate pipelines to come into our service territory. So we stepped into the shoes of those and acquired those contracts. So everything that was needed to initiate service and to maintain safe, reliable service was acquired by us in both of the transactions, actually.
Federal policy has been a little bit of a roller coaster ride here for a period of time relative to natural gas. How do you guys feel about the future of natural gas?
Well, we really look at it as very much of a transition energy source, right? It provides the safest, most reliable, most affordable, and really most resilient form of energy. In our community, we're fueled by natural gas. Our world-class restaurants, the tourism community, our hospitals, our schools rely upon natural gas to heat those places, to heat our water, to cook. And we think that the affordability of that and the low carbon footprint of it will really necessitate natural gas service being around for a long, long time. The good things that the government has done is that the U.S. Department of Energy has put out a lot of statistics, and for example, a household, just an average household, that saves over $1,000 annually by using natural gas as compared to electricity to heat and cook and dry clothes and heat water. So it's a very affordable source. And just in Louisiana, a household can save over $700 a month by using natural gas for heating. So we're blessed by having an abundance of natural gas here along the Gulf Coast, and it is a very resilient and affordable source of energy, especially as, we all are aware as we get into hurricane season that natural gas is a resilient fuel that provides a lot of backup power generation, and we stand ready to provide it. And it's the power may go out, but it's a very unlikely that natural gas service will be interrupted in those types of emergencies.
I count on it for my generator. Best best piece of equipment I ever purchased in my life, quite frankly. Tim Poche, thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations on the acquisitions, and thank you for making the decision to make your corporate home the place that we call home, the city of New Orleans. That is awesome for us, and we really appreciate it.
We couldn't be more excited to be proud citizens here in New Orleans. So thank you. Thank you for everything that you guys have done for us.
Well, thank you, sir. We'll be right back with Michael Heck's final thoughts. Stay with us. We're back with Michael Heck, President and CEO of G&O Inc. Michael, Ochsner goes big for kids. Big announcement on child health care.
Yeah, Ochsner is such a juggernaut. So they just had the ribbon cutting, but I guess the groundbreaking ceremony for the Gail and Tom Benson Ochsner Children's Hospital. It's one of the biggest, I think it's the biggest project that Ochsner's ever done. $300 million, 400 new permanent jobs.
massive, both in terms of care for our kids, massive for Oxnard Health, but also just as an economic development driver. Another thing that's opening sooner that we don't talk about as much, but I'm particularly excited about, is the Deborah and Robert Bobby Patrick Neuroscience Institute. This ties into the idea that we can be a center for neurological care, and that's a $120 million project happening right over there across the highway. So overall, you got Oxford spending, I think, $1.5 billion over the next 3 years. It's massive in terms of both healthcare and the economy.
Big, big investment for sure. Game On, one of y'all's creations. We talked about that at one of our shows. How did it turn out?
It turned out great. So we had GameFet, which is our annual event, to try to promote New Orleans and the region as a location for software companies, particularly video game companies. The good news is that now, after doing it for over a decade, the word is beginning to get out. It just has taken that long. We've already had some announcements from companies that have come to previous GameFets, a company called Testronic and a recent one called DAQA. And so we're just going to keep hitting it off. We had the event all over the city, including at the new Jam Nola and the new Toulouse Theater. It used to be One Eyed Jack. Sweet Crude played music for us. It's possible that DJ El Camino might have made a cameo. And this is about economic development being the long game. You've got to kind of keep getting the message out there. And eventually you can really change the narrative and people begin to think of New Orleans as a home for software.
DJ El Camino, more successful than Michael Heck in luring people here. Amazing.
Vastly more successful than Michael Heck in most. And I keep trying. And the thing is, I keep trying to meet the guy, but whenever I go into the room, he's gone.
Yeah. Well, he knows when to hide.
Yeah, he's like my personal snuffleupagus.
Yeah, there you go. As always, I enjoy the conversation on Hump Day every week with Michael
on
Heck.
Hump Day.
Appreciate it, sir. Are you going to be at Walt's event tomorrow?
Yes, I'll see you at Walt's event tomorrow for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Look forward to it. Look forward to seeing you there. Thank you, sir. Always appreciate your time, your insight. Keep up the great work, and we'll talk next week.
Thanks, Joel. Ciao, ciao.
We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we will visit with Dr. Lucio Millay, director of the LSU LCMC Health Cancer Center. May is World Cancer Research Month, and we'll highlight the future of cancer care and research in this area. And Ron Fauché joins us in the back half.